Monday morning, April the 7th, 2025, just a few minutes late on our start because of some things I was wrapping up with my wife. She's going to be out and about today, so I wanted to say goodbye to her properly. That's why we're a few moments late. Anyway, we're going to be talking about the trade wars, right, today, playing off Star Wars a little bit, and I'll even have a little bit of invocation of the movie formula in the seven components that we go through today. On the trade wars, I'm going to tell you out of the gate, there will be people that watch this. They will be special people, and they don't understand the concept of a weatherman. And that's what I am. I'm an economic weatherman. I'm a current events weatherman. I'll tell you this thing is happening, and we know this is happening, and so this will be the result. And one of the things that special people have a really, really, really difficult time understanding, especially if they have TDS, and if they have TDS and EDS, then they really have a hard time with this, is even a bad thing can have some positive results. And so what I'm going to lay out today is going to be fairly optimistic. It's not going to be doom and gloom that many of you showed up for. It's actually all the good that could come from what's happening right now. There's a couple things about that. One, it doesn't mean that I endorse everything that Trump does. At all. I don't endorse anything. I don't endorse everything any politician does. I don't care where they came from. If I had my way, most of this shit wouldn't matter because, you know, I think tax is theft. But I also am a pragmatic person. I live in the real world. I understand what other people are doing. I understand what other people are going to do. And I understand that the world is like a giant animal balloon. Okay? That's the best way I can describe it. So what I mean by that is, you know, you go to kid's birthday party and some person dressed like a clown or whatever is there, and they have these balloons and they stretch the balloon and they make this big long ass balloon, and then they turn it into a dog or a hot dog or a cat or I don't know, a crown for idiots or whatever they do, and the kids are happy. Well, if you take a balloon like that and you just blow it up, you may have a little space left where you could blow it up a little bit bigger. Anywhere you squish that balloon, some other part of that balloon expands. And that's something that's very difficult for people to understand today, not because the concept is difficult, but because the programming puts everybody in their own little box. And their own little box is my world, my world, my world, like a crab in a cooler. Yeah, yeah, I'm going to bite you. I'm going to bite you. This is my world, and I don't want anybody fucking with my world, and it's my world. It's the same person. It's a boomer today that you can terrify them with, Trump's going to take away your Social Security. Don't take my Social Security. And 25 years ago, they thought people that are their age now were stupid for believing it. And they told their mom or their grandma or their grandma, calm the fuck down. George Bush is not going to take away your Social Security. Or their great grandma or their grandma, depending on how old they are now, right? Yeah. Look, Ronald Reagan's not going to take away your Social Security. And if you don't think that this threat, they're going to take away your Social Security, is old as shit, then you haven't paid attention, or you're very wet behind the ears would be the term. So everybody's in their own little box, and everybody also thinks like America has to do these things, and it's whatever everybody else does doesn't matter. That's not how the world works. This is a globally connected world. And there are some things going on right now that if you look at any one of them by themselves, then the conclusion that you're going to draw is retarded. And hey, Alabama says, boomers don't believe that, not any that I know. Then you don't know enough boomers. There's plenty of boomers that believe Trump's going to take away my Social Security. Again, I've dealt with this. I've dealt with people that thought Bush the second was going to do it. Even Clinton was going to do it. Bush the first was going to do it. And Ronald Reagan was going to take away their Social Security. Ronald Reagan, who saved it, was going to take it away because it's a Democrat move, right? And about half of people hate the Republicans, about half of people hate the Democrats. So if you fall into one of those two camps, then mostly what you're told about the other side, you'll believe if it's negative. And mostly what you're told about the other side, if it's positive, you'll disbelieve. Anyway, my whole point is that this is an integrated system. And that every time we squish the balloon, it expands somewhere else. But it's not a balloon. It's hundreds of them. And until we start to pull all the pieces together, we can't really understand what's going on. So the other part of this today is to understand that as I lay out what I believe the Trump plan is, and I'll give you pieces of it that I absolutely know are happening, and I absolutely know that's why it's happening, and I'll give you pieces of it that we know is happening, and I'll tell you why I think it's happening, and I'll tell you things I think they're going to do and why I think they're going to do them. And I'll try to be clear about that. This is a known, and the outcome is a known. This is a known, the outcome is a guess. This is a guess, and the outcome is a guess. And you think this, if you're guessing the action, then you have to be guessing the outcome, right? So I'll try to be clear about that. And that is something that is very hard for people to do, but it's even harder for people to listen to. If you dislike Trump a great deal, this is going to be a very difficult episode for you. You're going to think that I'm rah-rahing Trump. If you love Trump, if instead of Trump derangement syndrome, you have Trump savior syndrome, same. You're going to get really mad at me today. Even though like this is going to be like 80% to the positive, you're going to fixate on not even the 20% negative. You're just fixate on like the 18% neutral, 2% negative. Because tribalism. And I just want to, before I do the sponsor segment and dig into this, I want to make a point about this tribalistic bullshit, okay? I listened to a speech given by no less than Nancy Pelosi mid-90s this weekend, and she was saying everything then that Trump is saying now. Literally verbatim. Tariff policy, fair trade, being taken. I mean, it's the exact same fucking shit. None of the Democrats hated it when she was saying it back then. Not one. And none of the Republicans thought it was good back then. Not one. Okay. Then I listened to Trump say the exact same shit he's saying today in a 1980s interview with Oprah Winfrey. Guess what? Oprah loved him. The left loved him. It was all dead on, perfect messaging. And the one thing I'll give Orange Man here is his message from the, like, I think it was like 1986 or some shit, right? Very, very young Donald Trump saying these things. What he's saying today is not close. It is not similar. It is verbatim what he said in the 1980s, verbatim. So if you like it today, but you hated it then, or you hate it today, but you liked it then there's a disconnect. And that's all I'm trying to bring about today is an understanding of this disconnect and that these people, whether you like them or not, that are running the government right now, they're not erratic. They're not chaotic. It may look that way. But there is a rhyme and a reason behind what they're doing. Now, you could have the best of intentions and still burn down the house. So I'm not saying this is going to work. I'm saying this is the angle. This is what they're trying to do. And here's how it could potentially work out. The way that they're trying to make it work out. And remember, this is a war, the trade wars, right? No battle plan survives what? Contact with the enemy. You have to adjust. And we are modeling this on Star Wars and specifically kind of the first trilogy, the one that had no woke bullshit in it, right? The one that didn't suck. And the one that had, like, the second trilogy was actually pretty good if you got rid of things like Jar Jar Binks, right? Like, that's the problem the millennials have. Like, Jar Jar Binks was in their Star Trek and or Star Wars, and there's just no coming back from that, right? But otherwise, it was okay. But it was like the last trio that was just there. So we're going back all the way back, 1977, with A New Hope. And that's kind of where we're coming at this today, from just a fun angle. Try to have fun with this, because it is serious shit. But if we're going to use that analogy, just remember the second movie in the trilogy. The Empire Strikes Back. It wasn't good. It wasn't good. And in this case, we're the Empire, yet we're not the Empire in the way we're taking the angle. So we'll see how it all works out. Before we do that, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day number one today is KnifeKits.com. If you've been around for a while, you know that KnifeKits has been around for a while, like going all the way back to 2010. They have been a sponsor of the Survival Podcast. They do a discount for MSB members, and they're a pathway to multiple things. They could be a pathway to a hobby or just a one-off, just build a knife to learn some skills, or maybe become a small hobbyist knife maker. They also are a pathway to something like a side hustle or even a full-time business. You can learn more at KnifeKits.com. They also have a lot of other really cool stuff like Kydex for holster making, amazing handle material, blue guns for you holster makers to be able to make holsters for guns that you don't own for customers and things like that. Again, it's kind of a business in a box or a hobby in a box. It's all up to you. Next up today is Start9 Private Servers. If you have ever thought, gee, I wish there was something I could do about the fact that literally everybody in the world spies on me, and everything I do on my computer is being recorded and traced and tracked. And all my data that I have that's available to me anywhere except in my home, if I'm going to get it across the internet, It's in the cloud, which just means somebody else's computer. I can be cut off from it. And it's a data breach risk. You know, for all the talk about data breaches on your computer, the big data breaches are all like government and giant corporations. Every credit agency has had a data breach. The government has had a data breach, right? With Social Security numbers, with veterans. If you're a veteran, a certain service window, I think about 1980 to about like 2000, like literally everybody that served in that period, your data was breached. Like it goes on and on and on with data breaches. Now, if that happens to things like high-level government systems, well, you know, Yahoo was breached, Yahoo Mail was breached, and the hackers got tons of shit beyond just your email and your login. They got like the content of your emails, including things like, "Hey, Bill, I owe you money, and here is an address to wire money to," all kinds of shit like that. You can make it all go away with Start9. You can access all your data from anywhere in the world, encrypted over Tor. And if you can install apps on a mobile phone and use them, then you can do this. And if you need some help, they'll be happy to give it to you. Check them out at start9.com. Remember, they do a hell of a good discount too for members of the MSB. With that, let's kind of get into this. And again, I do kind of want to follow the movie paradigm here from Star Wars, right? Just to make this a little bit more entertaining and a little bit more fun, since it is really thinking about economics, which is not the most exciting thing that you're going to hear about probably today. So let's start off. Remember, Star Wars had the opening crawl a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, and it kind of set the scene. So let's kind of set the scene here without the theatrics, though. Number one, I would start off with, you know, like A New Hope, right? The experts are wrong in just about every meaningful way, right? And it's all starting the anti-Trump hatred, the tariff hatred here. You don't even know what you're talking about, the people in the comments. I can tell by the way you're making the comments. I'm going to try to ignore them so I don't get derailed. But you're making reactionary comments. You might be right, but the way you're coming to that, and if your father's retirement is getting wrecked, your father should not be so highly leveraged into securities right now. Your advisor is an idiot, or you needed an advisor and you didn't have one, or you didn't follow basic protocol. If you're a couple years from retirement, if you're 60 and you're like 90% in stocks and securities, you're wrong. So let's just let that go and tell your dad to wait fucking 6 months and chill the fuck out, dude. I don't even know who you are. I'm sure this one is actually going to attract a lot of retards from outside the TSB fold that have no idea what they're even complaining about to me, let alone Trump. So let's try to do that. Okay. Putting that guy in a timeout. When you start like just in live stream, like every 2 seconds, you're putting down your bullshit and you're crying and you're mad and other people can't talk. I put you in timeout. Next time we'll put you out. Anyway, the experts are wrong. And here's how the experts are wrong. Number one, tariffs do not cause inflation because prices going up alone are not inflation. This is economics 101, and you can be fucking as angry as you want. You can cry as loud as you want. I'm sorry. Inflation is expansion of the monetary supply and more dollars going after less goods. Tariffs are an input cost, and therefore they affect supply and demand curve. So they can cause prices to rise in certain segments in certain ways, but it is not inflation. Inflation is overall, it is brutal, and it's a direct attack on the money that you hold. That's inflation. So it's not inflation. Rising prices alone do not equal inflation. When people stood in line back in the 1980s and paid ridiculous prices for a fucking Cabbage Patch doll, that was not inflation. It was specific to a single unit or single class of goods. So it's not inflation. It doesn't mean it's good. It doesn't mean it's okay. It doesn't mean it doesn't affect pricing. What it means is it does not expand the fucking M3 money supply. And if you don't know what I just said, you should not talk about inflation anymore. You should stop listening to me right now. You should go to ChatGPT or Grok or some shit, and you should have a conversation and find out what inflation and M3 money supply, M3, M2, M1 is. Because until you know that, you do not know what inflation is. You cannot understand inflation, and you can't understand what I just said. Next, Bitcoin didn't crash with the market. We'll get into that deeper later today, but this is a decoupling. I didn't rage. It is down from its high. But in history, since Bitcoin came on the scene, especially once it got to the point where you could buy it, right? Once it got to the point where you could buy it on exchange and then take it off and trade it, right, and it had liquidity, every time the stock market crashed, Bitcoin went with it. No matter where it was, if it was high or low, it got drugged down. It did not. It held. It held. And I would say the only reason it didn't go up is because it was already pulled down, and it's kind of at a fair value for right now for where the system is. So it's a decoupling. This is going to be really important as we go through this. Oil didn't spike. Oil prices is going to go through the roof. It's 60 bucks today. That's a magic number. We'll get into that. Right. So these are all places that the people that were talking shit before it happened have already been proven wrong. Prices are falling overall. Prices are down since it started, especially on the things that matter. We'll get into that, too. Again, Bitcoin is steady. Oil's crashing. The dollar is actually gaining strength in this situation. You don't like it? Yeah, I don't care if you don't like it. Again, I'm just telling you what's happening. And then we'll extrapolate what could happen. And this is really a forced evolution. This is not a collapse. It doesn't mean it'll be fun. It doesn't mean it'll be comfortable. It doesn't mean that there won't be some really hard times in between. But this is, and somebody's quoting Milton Friedman here on inflation, always a monetary phenomenon, basic multiple. Yeah, it is. Inflation is about the money supply. The money supply has not been grossly expanded. There's a lot of things that are going to come next. Interest rates are going to come down. We'll talk about that. There is no way out of that now. Like, the Fed is going to be forced by their own rules to do it, which might be part of the plan. It might be part of the plan. Again, there's going to be a lot of things here that seem pro-Trump. What they are is an extrapolation of these actions, when combined together, will have this net effect in the most likely scenario. And if that ends up working out, that's not pro-Trump. What I'm saying is, if Barack Obama was president right now doing all these same things, my analysis would be the same. If it was Joe Biden, my analysis would be the same, except there's no way this motherfucker's doing it. Okay, right? If it was Hillary Clinton, if it was Cackles, right? I don't care who it was. If anybody was doing this, I would be different from any party at all. I'm going to give you the same analysis. And we are going to star questions like this one. But remember, this is a deep topic today. I cannot one-off question answer right now. I need the word question in all caps if you're in the live feed. And I will star you if I see it, and I'll come back. And I'm alone today, and I got one eye. So remember that if you don't put that question in all caps. So let's start off with what's going on with the market right now. And this is kind of like the opening combat scene in a Star Wars movie, like lasers going everywhere, shit blowing up, etc., right? The deleveraging strike is what I have it in my show notes as. Is this controlled burn or total destruction? You have to think outside of I hate Trump or I love Trump to get just this segment. You have to stop. You have to stop chanting slogans. Tariffs are good, tariffs are bad. Both of those have to fucking stop. All the bullshit has to get cleared out. Here's what I'm saying. Whatever baggage you've brought with you today, and boy, can I see the baggage in the live stream, and you on the audio listening to me 2 hours after it's published or whatever, same thing. Take all of your preconceptions, wad them up in a ball, and stuck them up your ass. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Take all of it, put it in your back pocket for the next hour and a half. Can you do that? Can you take all... Because if you don't, you're going to be so busy arguing in your head, you're not going to understand how I'm piecing this together. Then it'll be there, and when I'm done and you've taken all this information in, then bring it all back out and then pick it apart to your heart's content. But listen with an open mind here. So the stock market crashed. Okay, it's really not that much down, let's say, over a five-year cycle. It's really not that big of a deal. Again, if you are these people that are talking about retirement, first of all, most of the people talking about that, they're not retiring and their parents are not affected by this. Most of the people saying it, they're just parroting the bullshit that's on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it. Like, the same shit gets fucking cut and pasted everywhere. Then people pick it up and start parroting it. Right. Just like COVID was. Cases are up. Wear a mask. It's just the same shit. Different scenario. OK, but this market was going to pop. the Dow, the S&P at all in a bubble, period. Inevitable. In fact, I didn't read it. I didn't have time, but Zero Hedge had an article out today that I think that's what it was about, basically saying that this is sooner, but it was inevitable anyway. And that's a good thing. And you might think, why is it good that the market goes down? Well, first of all, you have to understand, it is not the natural state of the stock market to always go up. That's never been the case. Anytime it's been up, 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 up for too long without a correction, there's been a very bad ending to it. Every time, all the way back prior to the Great Depression, every time you have continuous up with no real correction for too long, pop. This time would have been no exception. We probably would have been looking at a stock market bubble popping somewhere in around September, October this year without all this shit. So I'm just saying it was going to happen, but it would have been much bigger. But there's a different problem. People are acting like it's all a bunch of people selling their stocks in their 401ks that's causing this. It's not. This is all giant institutions selling off. The average person sat there like they always do with a deer in the headlight. Oh, my God, smack right in the face. Oh, my 401k is a 201k now, and cried and then sold, if they sold at all. Most of them aren't. This is big money sell-off. It is not your mutual fund manager or your ETF manager deleveraging certain stocks and moving to other stocks because they can't. If you have growth and income, there's a small list of shit they can buy. If you have emerging markets, there's a small list of shit they can buy. It's very regulated. They don't sell off the stocks to protect your money because they can't. When you buy an index fund, that's what you fucking get. When you buy growth and income, again, there's classes that you get. When you buy mid-cap, small-cap, large-cap, dividend stocks, like there is a bucket that they can pick from and allocate within. So it is not that. It is giant institutions. It is hedge funds, et cetera, that sold off. Why did they sell off? Did they sell off because the fundamentals inside the market itself changed? No, they sold off because they said, this is going to hit the market and the market's going to retract, so I'm going to get the fuck out before it does. In other words, they put their powder aside to buy into this mess that you're selling during. They did it on purpose, but there's another piece to it. A massive, and I mean a massive amount of that money that was in the market that just came out was leveraged into the market. Do you know what that even means? Those of you telling me I'm an idiot, that I don't know what I'm talking about, tariffs are bad, everybody knows it, and it's fine for other countries to do it, but not for us, and other bullshit, okay? It means that they had a lot of money invested that's not theirs, it's borrowed. And if the bubble pops while you're leveraged in, you don't lose money. You lose everything and you go negative. And then you have these giant institutions with their hands out like a bunch of beggars going to the Fed, going to the government saying, we need a bailout. I'm telling you, a bailout scenario was just avoided. That market was so high, so inflated by leverage, that if it had popped, instead of these people having enough fucking sense to get bent over the barrel hard enough to deleverage themselves, we would have been looking at a bailout scenario going into October this year. Flat out. That means we now have less risk of systemic failure. Doesn't mean the market's going to go right back up. Far from it. It will go back up over time. It will now begin its... We basically had an early flush out, is what we just had. And it was intentional. I believe the Trump administration knew exactly what the fuck was going to happen when they did this. I'm betting you some of his insider buddies called their insider buddies and said, hey, we're doing it. You might not think we're doing it, but we're fucking doing it, and you guys better deleverage. It was a forced deleverage. And that was actually very, very good. See, who do you hear this from? Anybody there going to tell me who you heard this from this weekend on the news? Nobody. Even people I really like that are independent, like Mark Moss. You didn't hear this from fucking Mark Moss either, did you? No, and you won't. You're going to hear this only here, all put together anyway. You'll hear pieces of it here and there. And you'll go, fuck, maybe he's right, okay? So the institutions lose money, but they don't go negative. And for the average person that's like 45, 50 years old or younger, don't even fucking worry about your 401k balance. If you were going to worry about your 401k balance and they were shrieking and screaming that tariffs are going to crash the market, and you said, I told you so, but yet you sat in stocks instead of moving to a cash equivalent in this 60-day run-up, I don't want to hear you now. You didn't know, or you would have done something about it. If you're 60 or 65 and you're on that retirement precipice and you're all in on securities and equities, your advisor's an idiot. And if you self-advise, you're not qualified to advise yourself. You should be at 60, I would say, you should be no more than 60% into securities and equities at any given time. Now, if you did that, if you were 40% cash or cash equivalents or bond funds with a guaranteed yield or something like that, money market, whatever. Right now, I would say unless you're really up in your retirement years, this is a buying opportunity. And I wouldn't buy all at once. I would DCA in over about 90 days. And you guys go run those numbers in 90 days and see how that would have worked out for you. And then run them in a year. 90 days of averaging in and then 1 year of holding after that and see what happens. And maybe I won't look so stupid to you anymore. People who have been around know that this kind of advice has come before and it's always been dead on because it's patternable. It's patternable. Basically, fear just flushed out the weak positions. You think all these people with big money, they're not weak. When you're leveraged in with billions of dollars leveraged, you're very weak because if one thing goes wrong, you're in deep shit. And that's what's just been negated. Now, what that does is it's a fire sale. And this is why, and I said it this way on Facebook, and a bunch of people got all, like, because their friends shared it with their friends who shared it with their friends who don't know me, got really upset and their little assholes tightened up and they cried like little bitches that I use this term. The reason the pores stay the pores. Now, when I use that term, those of you that know me know what I'm doing. I'm using the term that they use for you, and I'm doing it so it will get your attention. The pores stay the pores. The pores stay the pores because only the pores, who in this case aren't like, you think of the pores as being like some old ass show, like in, you know, London in the 1800s and people with coal on their face or something. And may I please have some porridge, sir? No, when I say the pores, I mean people that think with a poverty mindset. But many of these pores, and that's how, again, the elite view you as the pores, they actually have a lot of money. They have stocks, bonds, et cetera, 401k plans, good incomes, et cetera, but they're still poor. In other words, no matter how much if they're making 120 grand a year right now, they don't have any money. And if I gave them a raise to 200 grand a year in a couple of years, they wouldn't have any money. Now they might have more in their 401k that they can sit around and worry about. But what I mean is their cash flow is pretty much in and out. They're not accumulating assets at all. They just buy a bigger house and have a bigger mortgage payment. They buy a better car and have a higher car payment. That's all they end up with. And those, you know, the house at least is an appreciating asset. The car is a depreciating asset that you're leveraging right now, like even good credit, 7-8%. Or I got a great interest rate. No, you didn't, because they jacked the price of the car up and didn't give any discounts. And it's the same money because they squeeze the balloon like I talked about earlier. Right. So the reason the poor stay poor is you don't understand what you just got. A gift. Put my 401k. Oh, wait. So you have a 401k. Yes, I do. Okay. And you put money in your 401k every paycheck, right? Yes, I do. How much? 10% of your income. Okay. And why are you doing that? So I can retire someday. And how old are you? 45 years old. So how long do you have retirement? Minimum 20 years. Okay. And the price of the thing you're buying to hold as an asset long term went down and you're mad. Do you understand how dumb that is? All they can see is, but the money I'm holding, but it's, you don't have it. It's just a promise in the future that you're going to cash in later. This is an opportunity to buy more. What would I tell a person in that situation right now? Okay, if I cut your pay by 5%, you will bitch, cry, and in 3 weeks forget it ever happened. And you'll adjust your budget and you'll go on with your life and you'll work harder and make more money. And the 5% is still going to come out of the new money, but it's still more money. So you'll be all right. So I would tell that person, go to your HR Karen, since you have a JOB and it's about the only move you have. And you go to HR Karen and adjust your withholding up 5%. That's what I would tell you to do, and to buy more. Why? Because when people put shit on sale, and it's a durable good, something that lasts long term, buy more of it. Am I saying that over the next 30 days it'll go back up? It might not. I don't know. The more it goes down, the more you should buy. And the poor stay poor because they don't do that, and the rich get richer because they do. The rich spend their money on assets. The poor spend their money on liabilities. But when the poor actually buy some assets, they always want the assets to go up all the time. And that is a mentality that equals poverty. That's why you think the stock market's supposed to go up all the time. You're no different than the crypto bros that refresh their thing, except you look at your quarterly statements instead of refreshing your thing, or you refresh your thing when the media tells you to. Stop doing it. Down is good. If somebody said to me, if I had $100,000 right now, what would you do with it, Jack? Depends on what you have, but let's say you were just, I want it to be equal. Pick two things and tell me what to buy. I'd tell you to buy Bitcoin and stocks that are profitable and dividend producing stocks that are currently depressed. I would tell you to take that number and divide it by 90. Whatever that is, say 100,000 divided by half of it, 50,000 divided by 90. And over the next 90 days to buy that amount of Bitcoin every day. And then I would tell you, 90 days. So you're really looking at 3 months. So you're looking at 20 days a month. So 60 divided by 60 and buy into your equities at that same rate over the next 90 days. That's what I would tell you to do. That's what rich people are going to do. They're not going to go all in at once. It drives the fucking price back up. They want some time. And they don't know what their other rich buddies are going to do even when they collude. So there's this waveform that happens. So you keep pegging out all the way through. And if you went long, 6 months, fine. 180 days to get in, 300 days to get in. I don't care. But it would be something like that. This is a fire sale. The thing that you are relying on accumulating is on sale and you're crying about it. Stop. Like, if you're buying, I don't want to say a company. So let's just say Blue Widget Corporation is a good company that's been around for decades. It makes a profit and it pays a solid dividend, and their price of their stock just currently tumbled. If you buy that, if it's one of the units of things, or your ETF is a dividend producing ETF or something like that, right? And you have shares of that ETF. When the price goes down, you get more units per dollar spent. So when the price goes down, you should buy more. Because the game is to accumulate as many units as possible, knowing the performance metric across long term. Not fucking hard. But yet, the ability to make that mental switch is so difficult for the poverty mindset person. And the poverty mindset person today is driving a fucking Lexus or something like that, right? That's what they're doing, right? They have a job making six figures, and yet they have a poverty mindset because they have no money. And they just look at a number and are addicted to the digit instead of the reality underlying the digit. They don't understand what they've even bought. Panic always creates deep discounts. And this is the other thing about the poors, right? And I'm just saying anybody with the mindset would be the poors. In other words, you haven't learned to think differently yet. It's not about how much money you have or don't have. It's about your mindset. So in a panic market, the people with poverty mindset are always thinking sell. And the people with a wealthy mindset are always thinking buy. And then after it's all over, the poors always bitch that the rich got richer and that they should have done it too. But when it happens again, they don't. How many times have you seen this? If you're 40, 50 years old, how many times have you seen this in your life now? If you go back and think, when you're a little kid in the 80s, 1987 market crash that lasted like 15 minutes. Yeah. I'm done with this guy. I'm just done with this guy. Anyway, moving on. This is the more you have on hand, the better this is for you. The more cash you have on hand or the more income. I mean, this might be a time really to start, like selling shit you don't need to raise capital to buy things that you want to hold long term. Yeah, he was a special friend, wasn't he? Those that are commenting on him. Again, guys, if you have a question, I haven't seen any question in all caps. But basically what we have now is a war, and the tariff is a weapon that Trump and his administration can wield without approval. That's something very important to understand. There's not much Trump can do to negotiate trade with countries who he feels, whether you agree or not, who he feels have been taking advantage of us for 50, 70, 100 years. I happen to agree. They have been taking advantage of us for at least that long. At least that long. Certainly since the end of World War II, where the United States, as the victor in the war, took the most generous stance any country in that situation has ever taken in history. No nation has ever gone in, shed blood and treasure at the level we did. I know the Russians shed more blood, and maybe they didn't have more treasure, but they shed a lot. But they didn't rebuild the world. We did. We went in and we said, hey, we're going to fix it all. And the American people said, let's do it. There was this optimum high going on. We can do anything. Why not spread it out? And the thing is, if we had done it for a decade, say 1945 to 1955, and said, okay, swim, my little friends, you are on your own, it would have been fine. But we did not. We kept doing it, and we kept building the apparatus to do it. That's where USAID came from under Kennedy. We need to do more. We needed, and it became an element of regime change, and we were more worried about controlling the government than the economics. And everybody here that was making lots of money from it was short-term, rapid money from the situation, and then buy assets. While the poors were told, look how great your job is, go buy a house and be happy and shut up. And this just continued, and it raped this country raw. I'm telling you right now, if you get off the interstates and you drive through this country and you go to small town after small town after small town, what you'll start to realize is about half of those small towns weren't always small. They were medium-sized communities that were good places to live and have a job, and they were that way for decades before they really started getting raped hard in the 1970s. And you should know what happened in 1970. If you don't, look up what the fuck happened in 1971. I don't have time for a lesson in it today. But when we decoupled our money from gold, and we had already had, at that point, we were already almost 30 years into paying for the rest of the world, everything went to shit. And these countries simply said, great, let them inflate their money. We don't care. We'll just tax every single thing that they make that they send to our country, and we'll just bitch if they tax the things that we send to their country. Well, the tariff is a weapon, and it is working, and it's already starting to work. So Taiwan, I want to play this for you because I was already told today it's a lie, it's not true, and it's just a coincidence. Okay, what I'm about. So the president of Taiwan, well, let me let the official spokesperson for the president of Taiwan tell you what's already happened with Taiwan in regard to Trump's tariffs, which are now what? The second 5 days old. 5 days, this is... And Taiwan is a premier trading partner with the United States. A massive amount of goods and services go between the two of us. This is what Taiwan itself has to say about Trump's tariffs and what they're doing in response to them.
In response to the U.S. announcement of tariffs on countries around the world, President Lai Ching-te has outlined a series of strategic measures aimed at ensuring Taiwan's competitiveness. Following a series of meetings with business leaders, President Lai announced that Taiwan will not seek retaliatory tariffs against the U.S. Instead, Taiwan will pursue negotiations to achieve zero tariffs for both sides. By working together, we will usher in a golden age of shared prosperity. The president outlined a series of five methods for tariff negotiations. First, Taiwan has established a dedicated team to engage in negotiations with the U.S. We will start talks to attain a zero tariffs framework for both sides, similar to the USMCA model. Second, Taiwan will increase purchases of U.S. goods to reduce the trade deficit. Our government has compiled a list of potential imports, including agricultural, industrial, and energy products, as well as military procurements. Third, Taiwan will boost further investment in the U.S. following TSMC's historic $100 billion investment in semiconductor manufacturing. Fourth, we will review and eliminate non-tariff trade barriers. Fifth, Taiwan will address concerns on the illegal transshipment of low-priced foreign products and enhance export controls on advanced technology. These methods form the first part of the five major strategies. The remaining four strategies include supporting impacted industries, formulating medium and long-term economic plans, strengthening cooperation with the U.S. through a Taiwan Plus One framework, and launching nationwide listening tours of Taiwan's industries.
So what's interesting is during that, somebody who I've never seen in our live stream before, so I have no idea the history here, says, that's just Taiwan licking the boot. My response to that is, why do you care? Isn't that what the whole point was, to make them lick the boot? The whole point is, I believe that Trump doesn't really want to rely on tariffs. It's a weapon. I believe that any country that comes to the United States and says, we're not going to booger wolf back and bullshit you on this. We're legit going to go even trade. Okay, fine. Zero, zero. Now, there are some things going on that the media will twist so that you don't understand them. Here's a perfect example. There is an island that has nothing on it but penguins. Nothing on it but penguins. There are no people. There's been no people on this island other than an occasional stop by for some, you know, scientific equipment or something for decades. It's too cold. It doesn't grow anything. It doesn't produce anything. It's included in the tariff list. And so, of course, the media is like, Trump's tariffing penguins because they're actually – shut up. Shut up. You need to understand what's going on here. So, first of all, this island is a territory of Australia. So the tariffs for each country list the country and all their territories. So there's a territory of the United States called Bikini Atoll that we blew up an atomic bomb on years ago, many years ago, many decades ago, as a test. No one lives there because we fucked it up really bad when we, yeah, dropping an atomic bomb in a fragile marine ecosystem, not a good idea. But technically then, the United Kingdom, the EU, Australia have tariffs on Bikini Atoll and nobody's there. Why? Why would they do that? Well, because they would tariff the U.S. and all associated territories. And why would they do that? Well, they would do that because we could set up a temporary port in Bikini Atoll and just have our ships go there first and then go to Australia or England or Europe or whatever and say it's not a U.S. import. It's from Bikini Atoll. So it's a loophole, but it's also just intelligent to include, when you tariff a country, you tariff everything they own. You say it includes everything because do you think the Australians didn't figure that out? That they could have went to Penguin Island and then came here and then just said, it's not ours. It's not ours. It's from Penguin Island. There's just so much bullshit like that. And there's a lot of other things that are going on. So Vietnam also licked the boot of Trump, except Trump's people said, not so fast, Vietnam, because we know what you're doing. It's not domino theory we're concerned about. It's China theory. So what's been going on already is Vietnam has a lower tariff than China on a lot of things. So China and Vietnam have colluded, and China actually sends things through Vietnam to the United States, and Vietnam will take a little 2-point skim for just letting the boat basically come in and out, if it even does. But that, so Trump's guy came back and said, Vietnam, we love your idea. We love your idea. Zero, zero. Okay, no problem. However, all this other back-end bullshit has to stop. Right? And one of the things that people don't really understand about these other countries and their tariffs is the VAT taxes, too. It's a double fuck you. So a U.S. good goes into their country, let's say a 1.3, 30% tariff. But there's four levels, let's say, before it gets to the retail customer. These other countries have these value-added taxes, meaning each step through the distribution channel. So it comes into port, a wholesaler buys it. It goes to a distributor, it goes to a retailer, it goes to a customer. We have four steps. The VAT doesn't just go on the underlying price of the good. The underlying price of the good now becomes the 1.3 with the tariff on it. And by the time that product goes into the market and competes with a locally made product, that tariff's been hit three of those four times added onto by their VAT tax. So Trump's saying, like, I'll make deals, but there has to be something in place to prevent all this nonsense behind the scenes. Now, if you think that's unhinged, if you think that makes him stupid or retarded or a lunatic, then you are denying math. You are denying economics for the purpose of being angry. And I can't deal with you. I can come up with ways to criticize this, but I can't refute the basic fundamental logic of, if they're doing it to us, we're going to do it to them. And if they don't like it, then if they stop, we'll stop. And if you figure a different way out to do it, we're going to close that loophole. So it's not a, because how easy would it be for Trump right now to just start taking political victories? Okay, Vietnam, sure, no problem. No problem. We'll do that. Okay, Taiwan, without even negotiating, we'll just say sure. But they're not. They're closing the loopholes. Now, a lot of you that are mad always want the loopholes closed until it actually hurts to close the loophole. Basically, what most people, I want all these things, but I don't want to make any sacrifices to get them. It's a war. You don't get out without a few scars, right? And you can either capitalize on the downtrend during a war and become wealthy, or you can bitch about it and stay poor. And when it all comes back, then you can say you knew all along, but you're still in the same place and your position is not improved at all. In fact, because you got knocked down during the war, your position's actually less. And then you can tell all the people like me how lucky we are again. And I just say again, like, period, again, period. I hear it all the time. U.S. tariffs are just basically going to force better trade terms overall. Companies are dropping prices, by the way, to stay competitive. I'm starting to notice a trend in some consumer goods being sold at a discount as merchants attempt to clear inventory. As it doesn't even make sense, but they're doing it, right? You would think they would want to hold on to inventory that's tariff-free, but instead they're using the tariffs to fire sell their own products to raise capital. Now, why would they do that? Why would they do that? Because what's happening right now? Buying opportunities. So if I have a great big warehouse full of very inexpensive goods and there's a buying opportunity, what good does it do me? What good does it do me? It doesn't do me a lot of good, does it? Now, if I sell those cheap goods in mass and I have a big wad of cash during a buying opportunity, so that's, and you're seeing company after company investing in domestic production within the United States. Don't believe these people that there's nobody in the United States that wants these jobs. I guarantee you right now, you go into like Appalachia, especially West Virginia, rural Pennsylvania, et cetera, and you build a factory that builds something and you're paying people $20, $25 an hour to start, they will line the fuck up to work. Do not believe that they won't. There's plenty of people right now already working, and they're working for mom-and-pa businesses. They're making just over minimum wage in these small towns. You know, if you go to work for a company here in Dallas-Fort Worth, you're probably not even talking to them for less than $15 an hour. I think Chick-fil-A is paying $18.50 an hour for starting people down in Lake Worth. $18.50 to work at Chick-fil-A as a starting part-time worker. But when you go into, you know, Jim Bobville, there's a lot of people making $10-$12 an hour. There really are. You give those people a shot at a job making $20-$25, they're going to jump. And that's going to clear out that competitive position locally so that more people can move in, because there's a lot of people that like that $12 an hour job, but Jim Bob has it already, so Tom Bob can't get it. They will go to work. Don't tell me they won't take these jobs. I talk to young people all the time looking for jobs that pay something decent, that don't live where you can go work at a fast food place for $18. Now go work for Costco, part-time $20, full-time $30 starting. They will take these jobs. It's not that you can't fill those jobs because nobody wants them. It's because people aren't where the jobs are. And a lot of people in that situation, they can't afford to move unless they have a guarantee that they have the job. And a lot of times those jobs are not, you know, you can say it's $30 an hour to work for Costco, but go get the job. It's competitive. It's hard in the city where it's being paid that way. But you shore up this, and I'm going to tell you here, this is from personal experience. This already happened in the first Trump administration. I have a very good friend who project managed a job and built a manufacturing facility on the Texas coast during Trump 1.0. It was a multi-billion dollar job. Up until that point, he's done bigger since then. This guy PM'd the building of the Tesla plant, the Gigafactory in Austin. That's how big this dude is. And he built that factory first. Not only was it a direct response to Trump's initial tariffs in the first administration, not only is it employing thousands of people today, but they're doing it very low price because they have zero cost of electricity. Why? Because they have a great big giant set of generators in this factory that provide all the electricity for the plant, and they pay nothing to run them. Why? Because the Trump administration in 2016 removed certain stupid federal regulations that made it all but impossible to uncap a capped gas well. See, we have these gas wells on the coast, and they don't make enough gas anymore to liquefy and transport it and make it profitable, but they make plenty of gas. So they uncapped the gas well, they built the factory, they tied into the gas well, and they're making electricity for free off natural gas. So not only are they paying nothing for electricity, like when the grid goes down, they don't give a fuck, they can keep running. Interesting, huh? This happened a lot. I'm just telling you about one facility this happened in. More and more of this stuff is happening. They're rebuilding here. People are like, well, they're going to do all this automation, there won't be as many jobs. No, there won't be as many jobs, but there'll still be jobs. This fantasy people live in that they're going to build a factory and like one person just pushes a button and the whole factory runs, it's fantasy. It's bullshit. When you build, you have to transport, right? Autonomous trucks, sure, someday, no time soon. Truck drivers make good money, right? There's going to be a huge shift, and it's all because of this. Deflation is going to continue to show up on consumer goods. I know that's hard to believe. But when you get into this kind of, you're basically creating a deflationary market on purpose. What is the number one input cost for everything we produce and transport in America? What is it? Anybody know? It's not hard to figure out. It's energy. That's why the Chinese uncapped the gas well and made their own. It's expensive and it's variable. Well, energy costs are going to go down, and here's why. The oil markets are crashing. Oil markets are crashing. Why? Mainly because you're going to need less freaking energy to move product if they're built domestically. That's the long-term reasoning behind contracting leverage into oil and gas, especially oil. Now, here's something about oil. The price is not driven strictly by supply and demand. There's a lot of oil speculation that drives the price up. And as soon as all those oil traders who were leveraged into their positions pulled their leverage positions out, the oil price corrected to the actual real cost of delivery of oil from countries like the United States to itself today. Simple. The cost of production is always going to be, or I'm sorry, the cost of a good is always going to be based on the cost of production plus some fair margin. Always. It has to be. You have to at least get paid more than it costs you to make it or you go out of business. Now, there's something very interesting about the number 60 in the oil market. There's a certain country, and it ain't Saudi Arabia, though they ain't happy about it. But there's a certain country that when oil hits $60 a barrel and lower, things get really, really difficult for that country. And many of you people spent the last 4 years shrieking about how bad that country is and how our Democratic partners in Ukraine need to defeat that country. And of course, that means that country is Russia. $60 a barrel oil for Russia is economic, not a death sentence, but it's like economic cancer. Like treatable cancer that's going to make you really, really sick and might kill you, but probably won't. You're probably going to make it, but boy, you're going to look bad. You're going to look like an AIDS victim in 1986. That's what sustained $60 oil is for Russia. Here's an interesting thing. U.S. oil companies don't party, and you know, a lot of little independents might have real trouble here. But in general, U.S. oil extraction companies do okay between 50 and 60 bucks. It's when we go below 50, starts to hurt us too. 50 and 60 is it's just a perfect little number. Now, if you're trying to end a war with Russia, and sanctions didn't work, and spending billions of dollars to give the Ukrainians weapons, and they shoot their own shit down with the weapons we gave them, and they're a bunch of freaking idiots. We're paying their oligarchs. We're paying their bureaucrats retirement. That's part of the money we've been sending them. They're literally like somebody that worked at like the town square who's retired now, your money's paying their fucking 401k equivalent, just so you know. So all of that didn't work. And we're at a point now where Russia's like, we want peace. Ukraine's like, we kind of sort of want peace, but we don't because we've got this idiot running our country we can't get rid of. And he knows as soon as the war's over, he's the fuck out of there, right? Like, and you've got that tension and you need to weaken both sides. Well, weakening Ukraine's easy. Listen, Y'all won't fucking deal. We keep pulling back what we do for you. That's the easy side. Weakening Putin, that's hard. You just did it. You just did it. Not only does lower energy costs help the American economy long term, but it weakens the fuck out of Russia. Why? 40% of Russia's government revenue last year, 40% came from oil. Many of the wells in Russia are old. They're highly productive, but they're old. So the production amount that comes out of them, what I mean by productive is there's a lot of oil down there still. It's very expensive to upgrade those fields. They have a break-even number of $45 to $50. In other words, they don't make a penny till they're over 50, and then the government's taking a huge portion of their money. So what do in that situation? You stop. Now, Russia has a sovereign wealth fund. I think it's like $185 billion. They can back funnel it to subsidize the oil companies for a time, but that's eroding their asset. Right? And here's somebody saying Russia doesn't want peace. Of course they want peace. I don't have time for you today. You're clearly someone new around here. And you have no idea. I guarantee you this person probably has a freaking Ukrainian flag in his profile on X or something like that. I guarantee you he's dumb enough to think that Ukraine is a democracy. It is not. And he's saying, if I trust Putin. Anybody here that knows me, when somebody says that, you just fucking laugh and write the person off, right? Like, I don't trust anybody. Go read the news. Stop reading the news. Start listening. Maybe you'll learn something. So yeah, oil dropped to $60. We're going to have lower energy costs across the board. Russia will suffer economically. So he thinks I'm like on Putin's side. I'm here talking about Putin suffering. I'm talking about a 40% hit to the revenue of the Russian government, making them more willing to capitulate and give some in the peace process. And he thinks I'm on Russia's side because he's a special person. He's a special person. Yes, The View told him so. Special person, probably a special libertarian on top of it. Either that or he's a leftist, one or the other. Anyway, or you know, he could be a neocon. All of them are just as retarded as each other equally. But you're going to see continued economic leverage replace military escalation. We just weakened Russia more in a week than a conflict with Ukraine has in 4 years. I want you to think of it. This 40% of Russia's revenue to their government, 40%. You want to do that with the United States? What do you think would happen to the United States if we took a hit on 40% of our revenue, and we didn't take all of it, like we cut 40% of our revenue by 50%, that would be a 20% overall hit. 20% overall hit to government revenue. What would that look like for us? Now, understand that Russia is more socialist than us from a social program standpoint, and they have a lot more people that are given a lot more stuff from the government revenue that they now won't have. This needs to get resolved quick for Russia. Russia needs oil back at $65 minimum. And Russia sings at 70. 70 and up, they're great. 65, they're getting by. 60, they're barely surviving. 55, they're starting to die. It's not a big leap to go down another $5 per barrel of oil. And again, we don't have that problem. Even if our oil companies take it kind of hard and they have to downsize for a while, it would hit the job market, but it doesn't hit the government revenue market the same way. See, our friend here is quiet now. He's starting to figure out that maybe, because I didn't say exactly what he wanted to hear, maybe, just maybe, there's something to be learned. That's good. Everybody needs to take whatever amount of time they need to be able to willingly listen to opposing views. We also have something else in this, though. And this is what I'm really going to trigger some people. You're for CBDC. Shut up. Listen and learn. All right? And I know I'm getting a lot of special people today because this topic brought in people that have never heard an episode of this show before. You have to listen before you criticize or you don't know what you're criticizing. I think that's a reasonable position to have. So what we have is the rise of the digital dollar. We're on the precipice of that. That's about to happen. And that's about to happen in a way that you can't understand if you don't dig into this deeply. And LibertyCast says, we don't follow the media's narrative. And this is an interesting thing. If I was spouting the left media or the right media right now, the people that have problems with me would have less problems, even when they disagree. It is diverging from everybody's story. The people that, because the mind is repelling that. You're hearing new information that conflicts with what your belief system is. Either I'm supposed to agree with you or I'm supposed to be completely on the other side. Both of those things, your mind is now conditioned to accept. And if we weren't in that position in 2019, boy, are we after COVID. Oh, my God, did they beautifully divide America with that, like to stupid and dumb. Like that's where they divided everybody to. Oh, just begging wants more XRP. Well, you're retarded. Go buy it. Piss your money away and give it to Ripple, the company, because that's what you're doing when you buy Ripple. We're not talking about Ripple. Ripple's garbage. It's hot bullshit. And we don't do shitcoins here. There are two forms of crypto worth talking about going forward. And they are stablecoins and Bitcoin. That's it. They're the only ones that have actually succeeded in any way. Thank you, Nicole. I appreciate that. They're the only ones that have actually had a success. Who takes Ripple? Who takes Ripple? I looked the other day, and it was something like some millions of dollars of Ripple went on exchange, but you can actually see through their pseudo blockchain, which is what it is, like how much of it actually changed hands other than through exchanges. It was like $24,000 in a day. It's a fucking joke. So forget your shit coins, guys. Like, who takes it? No one takes it. I drink Ripples. I don't know what that means. Anyway, the U.S. is moving to a Bitcoin reserve. We already know that. The EO has already been written. The task force has been put in place. The directive is all the Bitcoin the U.S. has, don't sell. Buy more in a revenue-neutral model. That's incredibly simple to do. There's a lot of money in government that's has not been allocated yet. It has not been apportioned yet that can be used. There's a lot of times when you cut a program, you get a surplus out of it. You can do that. But you can do something this simple. Get everybody in the government that uses a government credit card on a credit card with a cashback program that has cashback in Bitcoin, like River has or Fold is about to have, et cetera. Maybe you say you can pick your credit card even, but it has to be one of these, and the cashback has to go to the government. And we could stack billions of dollars of Bitcoin a month just with that, and it would have a net zero impact on cost to the taxpayer. So that's going to happen. But at the same time, as we talked about before, the banks are being not just allowed to, not just permitted to, encouraged to issue their own stablecoins. So, of course, the most well-known stablecoin is Tether. Well, Tether is a company, not a bank. And the way Tether works is they actually take dollars and put them in the bank and hold dollars as a reserve against the digital dollars they issue. And they charge interest for a service. That's how they make money. Well, the banks aren't exactly on board with that because it doesn't really help them a lot. But if they could be in that business, and that now they can, the way has been cleared for them to do that, and I think we're going to have some regulation that's going to make it even more clear, and they may be waiting on that, and they're going to start issuing digital dollars. Digital dollars, you would think, would be an inflation mechanism. It is not. It is a deflation mechanism. Because these banks are not going to be able to issue digital dollars as loans. That's the big difference. When you go to a bank and you borrow money to buy a house, you are helping the bank print money with your promise to repay it. They don't give you money they have. They don't have a dollar for the dollar they give you. They don't even have a 10% reserve requirement anymore. And they never really did because they're not loaning. Like you would think that 10% reserve means if the bank had, let's say, small, tiny, itty-bitty bank, $1 million, they can loan out $900,000. It doesn't mean that at all. If they had $1 million, they can loan out under the old system even, $10 million. And the money they're holding is the reserve against the loan. You see how that works? So it's all printed money. It's all new money. The stable coins will not work that way. They will have to have the deposit on hand against the stable coin issue. Instead of having a bank account with them that says you have your dollar in their bank, you'll have one of their dollars in your phone that you can send to me, and I can send to Bill, and then Mick can send it to Victory Garden, and Victory Garden can send it to Liberty Cast. And eventually, it can end up tendered back into that bank, but they have to have the reserve. What this does to create deflation is anybody with a smartphone anywhere in the world will instantly have access to U.S. dollars inside the U.S. banking system. Countries can try to stop this. They can say you're not allowed to do it, whatever they want. It won't matter. There is no way to stop it. You can't stop drugs. You can't stop freaking bits and bytes. It's just retarded. It's undoable. So now you take, and you have to understand, as bad as the dollar is from an inflation standpoint, and it's bad, it is the least smelly shirt in the hamper. Imagine you woke up, you have to leave the house, you have no choice, you open your closet, there's no clothes in your closet, you got to go now, something really bad's going to happen, all your clothes are in the hamper, there's a shirt you wore yesterday, it kind of stinks, but it's not that bad, it's not the bad, it's sitting on top of the hamper, kind of off to the side. You pick it up, you shake it out, maybe you run it through the dryer for a minute with a sheet, and you put it on because it's still better than all the rest of your fucking clothes, you dirty bastard, you didn't do your laundry, okay? That's the dollar compared to every other global currency. And some of the other global currencies are at the top of the hamper too. Maybe they could get the dryer treatment and be sort of okay. They're still not as unstinky as the one on the top. And a lot of them are deep in the hamper. They've been in there for 2 weeks while you didn't do your fucking laundry, and they reek and they smell and they have shit on them. That if you're holding Turkish money, if you're holding Pakistani money, if you're holding Chad money, right? Not Chad, the Bitcoin Chad, but Chad, the country money, Ethiopian money. If you're holding Nigerian money, right? If you're holding Argentinian pesos, if you're holding Venezuelan money, the dollar looks really good. Now, the dollar inside the U.S. banking system with FDIC backing, it's gold standard. And the fact that you and your buddies can start trading in dollars, and even if your bank says you're not allowed to buy them, how hard is it to go peer-to-peer? It's simple. It's impossible to stop. It's open source software. You can run on a computer, a laptop, a smart device, whatever you want. It's unstoppable. That takes dollars, and it proliferates dollars across the whole world. So I listened to my old buddy Vin Armani, who calls himself Suspirian or something like that now, talk about how these tariffs are actually designed to bring U.S. dollars back to the United States, specifically paper dollars, and like this rare disagreement with Vin, Suspirian, whatever the fuck he's called now, right? Rare disagreement. This is designed to push more dollars out in the world. Exactly the opposite. Exactly the opposite. But then have those dollars in a cycle coming back and going out, coming back and going out, because the financial systems in the world, and specifically the United States and the government, make money whenever money moves. The financial systems and our government, it doesn't even matter if they directly get the money. They are able to tax movement and charge fees for movement. So you have a financial boom on top of a manufacturing boom this creates, with a forestalling of inflation and maybe temporary deflation. And that's temporary deflation over a longer period of time than just from the initial shock and a market response. This is very hard for people to get their head around because it all goes back to the beginning. The experts say tariffs are going to increase inflation, which isn't possible. Money printing causes inflation. More money and expansion of the monetary supply causes inflation. Price up does not equal inflation in of itself. Again, let's say that, I don't know, a weather event hits Baja, Mexico, where they grow almost all the organic carrots sold in America. And maybe it's not a weather, it's some kind of carrot disease, right? Carrot virus. And it kills like half the crop. And all of a sudden, the cost of organic carrots in the United States goes up 50%. It's not inflation. It's supply-demand curve. They're different things. Because even though the carrot went up in cost, not all carrots went up in cost. And even though the carrot went up in cost, it didn't affect your money. If the carrots went up 50%, but inflation is 4%, the value of your money was robbed by 4%, the cost of the carrot went up by 50%. It's not the same thing. It's not even about the proportion of your income you spend on carrots. It's about the wealth you're holding. What is the effect on it? That's inflation. And so every time you hear somebody on TV say tariffs cause inflation, you could already just forget everything else that person says. Because they just said blah, 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 blah. They just said gobbledygook. So they've either done it because they're fucking stupid and they don't know what I just told you. Because this is basic economics 101. Like, I took economics in ninth fucking grade in high school and I learned what I'm talking to you about today. So either they're stupid, which they're probably not. So you have to believe somebody with an economics degree doesn't know what I learned in ninth grade. I think they're lying. They know they're lying to you. But they know that you're dumb, and I don't mean you personally, don't get insulted. I mean the American people are dumb. And as the Democrats told you, inflation is a word the right taught you. That's what they said in the middle of Biden's administration. We actually had inflation. It's just a word the right taught you. You don't even know what it means. Well, they were right about part of it. You don't know what it means if you think it means prices go up, the value of money going down. That's what inflation is. And it is a direct response to the expansion of the supply. And because of the expansion of supply, the value of the new money has to be taken from the oldest. Where else would you get it? If you had $1 billion in circulation, that's all there was in the world, is $1 billion. And you printed $100 million, 10% of the existing supply, expanded by 10%. That's 10% inflation. The new money has to get its value from something. It didn't get it from gold. It's not backed by gold or Bitcoin or anything else, or silver or walrus tusks or corn or wheat or soy. It's not backed by anything. It's fiat issuance. It has to get value from somewhere, so it sucks it from the existing supply. And the reason I'm hitting that so many times today through this, until you understand that, you can't understand what's going on here. You can't understand how you're being lied to. So what we're seeing now is crypto. When I say that, I'm only using I hate the word crypto. The word crypto, it brings out the XRP idiots, et cetera. It brings out all the shit coiners. And their shitcoin's going to moon or whatever, and they have no idea how it works or why it works. The reason I'm using crypto is because I'm including stablecoins now. You're going to have banks that have issued stablecoins and Bitcoin reserves. And those Bitcoin reserves might be held by the bank itself for the bank, but more likely they're going to be held for bank customers. Banks are going to become Bitcoin exchanges. Banks are going to go more and more into a model of, come get our credit card at 16%. We'll give you 1.5% cash back in Bitcoin if you want it. There's going to be more of those, a lot more of those. And that means that the average customer will hold their Bitcoin in their credit card statement because the average customer is going to be stupid and not want to self-custody because they trust their bank. That's why they have their bank. And that's going to make the Bitcoin an effective bank reserve, even if it belongs to the customer, because your cash is an effective bank reserve, even though it belongs to you. Your bank, the money you have deposited in the bank is not your reserve. It's the bank's reserve that they hold on your behalf. Only when you ask for it do they divest of the reserve. See how simple it is? Nobody explains it to you that way because they don't want you to know. Because you would not trust banks at all if you really understood banks. You would only use them for what you have to. You would have just enough money in the bank to pay your bills and have your reserve savings, and that would be about it. And you'd have everything else in some other form somewhere else. Why do you think they don't want you doing that? So what this will do is create an increased global demand for dollars. The exact opposite of what my friend Vin said. Think about being a person, even in a relatively stable country, in the EU, Croatia, Italy, France, Spain. And the euro keeps taking it up the ass relative to the dollar. And Berlin can print effectively money on behalf of the whole. Like, Berlin is the EU's DC. And the European Central Bank is really the German Central Bank. And they can just rake your ass over the table anytime you want. You think you might want to just hold some money in dollars? Just some. Especially if it was easy. Especially if, like, whatever business you had, there were people willing to pay you in dollars instead of euros. Okay, that's actually a minority of the demand that I'm talking about. Again, Pakistan, India, Chad, Niger, right? South Africa, Libya, Australia, Argentina, the Philippines, Russia. Well, you can't do it in Russia. There's a lot of things you can't do that people do all the time. So that's actually going to put more pull on dollars out. Now, how do you get stuff in as you send dollars out? What happens when you send dollars out and build stuff? You start sending stuff out to bring the dollars back in. You create a trade imbalance, a surplus of dollars and outside the country and a surplus of goods inside the country. And now you have a way to change the whole trade relationship. Again, I'm not saying it's going to work. I'm saying that's the plan. And it's a well thought out, reasonable plan with a good chance of working. All right. Liberty Cash is paper cash in a safe. It does no good. You can't fight inflation by putting paper cash in a safe. Can't do it. I print money. I can go right into your safe. If inflation is stated at 4%, it's actually 8%. And you put $100,000 in your safe. You have 17 different locks on it. It's guarded by a friggin' team of Rottweilers that'll kill me. And I'm the Federal Reserve. I'm like, he doesn't need that $8,000. Push a button. Liberty Cash $8,000 is in my bank. You're fucked. You still have 100,000 units, but I have $8,000 worth of your value. And I'll do it next year. And I'll do it next year. And I'll do it next year. And you can't do a fucking thing because you put paper cash. Now, am I saying not to save paper cash? No, I'm saying understand that's the cost of holding paper is around 8% per annum. I don't care what the CPI is. I don't care what they tell you. However, that may change in the coming years for a time. This stable currency or stable coin gambit, and that's what it is, an unexpected move, this stable currency gambit is a temporary solution to a long-term problem. Let's not misunderstand it. And let's also understand something else about it. The EU knows it. The EU knows exactly what we're doing, and they're trying to respond to it. You know what they just said? We don't want anybody self-custodying crypto, which really means Bitcoin and stable coins. That's what it really means. Okay. When they say they are not worried about fucking your shitty Ripple, right? They're not worried about your shitty Ripple coin or whatever diddly do friggin' Dogecoin crap ass bullshit you have. They don't care about that. It's not enough to matter. They do care about Bitcoin because it's an alternative. So instead of keeping your money in their bank, you keep your money in Bitcoin. And they do care about a stable coin in the form of U.S. dollar because they know that we have a more stable currency than they do and a more desired currency than they do. So what they said is we don't want anybody. Now, they haven't actually passed the law yet, but we don't want anybody to self-custody. And if you have a custodial wallet, that wallet should only work during business hours. Think about that. So you're going to have a cryptocurrency and you can't spend your money on Saturday. You can't transfer your money on Saturday. You can't trade your money on a Saturday. That's what they want to do. That's a direct response to this because they know what we're doing. They were probably told, I'm telling you, this whole thing where you think like this guy's doing this, Trump's guys are all doing this, and these guys, and they don't talk to each other back channel is nonsense. I guarantee you they're both telling each other exactly what they're doing because they're both trying to get the reaction they want to from the other side. So what we're getting to a point now is Bitcoin decoupling and acting like an actual digital gold that has nowhere near the potential for manipulation the gold does. Gold is an incredibly manipulatable commodity. Most of the gold held in the world is paper gold, and there is no way there's enough physical to back the paper, and you can't audit it to prove it. Bitcoin can be audited, in fact, is every 10 minutes. From the day Bitcoin started, TikTok, next block, every 10 minutes, it's audited by thousands of people all around the world with little bitty boxes called nodes. This right here can audit the Bitcoin network every 10 minutes. You should have one. If you don't, you don't. But you should. The more people that do it, the more secure the network becomes. So you can't issue paper Bitcoin that's not backed. You can issue paper Bitcoin, but it has to be backed because we can always add up the two sides. There's only so much Bitcoin in circulation. We know exactly how much. We know what addresses they're on. And we can even, when somebody's holding billions of dollars in Bitcoin, hundreds of thousands of units, it doesn't take anybody long to figure out who has that Bitcoin. When you look at BlackRock, we already know all the addresses their ETF has. We know. And it vets out. I will right now, for some of you who don't believe me, give you a free tool you can use. I'm going to drop a link in the chat. It's built on Doom. You can go right here. And you can not only see the issuance, how many, you know, units there are, all the companies holding them, you can see, if you dig into it deeper, you can see all the addresses, all of it's held on. So you have an uncorruptible monetary unit of account. And that is now decoupled. You can't say it didn't, because in the past, if the stock market got hit as hard as it did, Bitcoin would have tumbled 15% from where it was, and it didn't. It's not soaring, but it's on its own now. It's decoupled. And the United States government is stacking it. We may already be stacking it without announcing it. I'm going to tell you right now, there are a lot of people that know this is happening, and they don't want you to figure it out until they get as much put away as they can, because this is going to become a race for a very limited commodity. So do with that what you do. But here's what we have. We have a new order rising. That doesn't mean the good guys win. Most wars have been fought by two sides that maybe one side was worse than the other, but neither side was necessarily good. Neither side was necessarily good. You know, were the Nazis the bad guys in World War II? I say that unequivocally, yes, right? But does that mean the Allies were the good guys? Okay, so that means the Soviet Union was the good guys. Probably less bad than the Nazis, not the good guys. But we were, right? Us and our friends, the Brits. So when we firebombed Dresden, we told the Brits, you guys go ahead and do that shit. When the war was already a known outcome and it didn't, and we firebombed a city of that size with women and children, we were the good guys? Really? Really? We were the good guys. We were just less bad. So I say that here at the end for my special friends, right? I said that for my special friends to understand that I'm not saying that it's necessarily all good. There's just a lot of positive outcomes. In fact, I'll put it a different way. Throughout history, the greatest fortunes were built amid the turmoil of destruction. If you go back and look when the biggest wealth was built in this country, it was right after the War of 1812. It was during and right after the Civil War. It was during and right after the Spanish-American War and the associated depressions in the early 1900s and late 1800s. It was during and right after World War I. It was during Prohibition. It was after Prohibition. And it was during World War II. In fact, no fortunes have been built in the world of real products and goods that compare inflation adjusted to those times to this day. All of the mega fortunes that were really built, if you get past the high, the World War II high ran from about 1945 to 1965. Everything else is tech. Everything else is tech. All the big manufacturing things that did happen in the United States since the 70s were all established companies. About the biggest success in manufacturing in the United States that's really manufacturing in the United States in the last 50 years, you're not going to like this when I say it, especially if you're an EDS, but it's Tesla. Tesla's actually made in America, built in America, designed in America, delivered in America. Tell me another company that actually builds a deliverable product in America, founded after 1975, that is a major force in the market today. I'm not saying there isn't one. I'm saying it's not coming to mind. There's not a lot of them. You want tech companies, I can start naming them. Apple, Microsoft, you know. Not hard. Oracle, Facebook, Twitter. Okay, SpaceX, we're back to what? Elon, right? I mean, think about it. What have we done? 1975 to 2025, 50 years. What have we done? What have we made in America that builds things, that delivers things here in America, that when I give you the name of the company, you're like, oh, them. you know, some of my customers during my days in sales were companies like Sealand Services, huge multi-billion dollar account I had with them. I had a multi-billion dollar account. They were a multi-billion dollar company. You know what they did? They imported goods to America. We've made all our money in this country in the last 50 years, most of it, either producing energy, producing technology, or moving shit between countries. This is a new order. This is an attempt to change that. This is an attempt to rebuild small town America, to reestablish blue collar jobs. And people are saying finance and software. Yeah, and I'm open to being wrong. I bet you there's a couple companies I'm missing here. I bet you somebody did something somewhere and made a big company that's, you know, it's a Fortune 500 or something, and they actually build things in America. I'm missing one. But it's not a lot, is it? I mean, otherwise, you'd be screaming at me right now. All my haters in the comments from earlier would be just, it's this and it's that. It's A, it's B, it's C. It's not there. It's just not there. So here's how the new order rises. Weak hands are shaken out of the market. This always happens. You take the people who are leveraged, they have to decouple or they get blown up. And the people that never really understood why they bought what they bought, I had to sell it because it went down. When do you need the money? You're 40 years old. You need the money in 25 years. You're retarded. I'm sorry. The weak hands get shaked out, right? Nick says the pet rock guy. We didn't build anything, though, did we? We didn't build a pet rock. I don't think gluing a couple eyes on a rock really counts. Trade power shifts to favor the United States. Now, that doesn't mean that we end up with everybody who has a trade deficit having a trade surplus with. That is not what it means. What it means is the momentum shifts. Not only has the U.S. been gutted, not only has the U.S. become everybody's bitch and the world's credit card, it's gotten worse every year. Stopping it would be a win. Reversing it by 10% is a massive victory. And I think we can do better than that over the next, let's say, decade. Energy costs will continue to drop globally for a time. For a time. And if we continue to exploit U.S. energy resources, we'll probably find a floor where our own energy companies will say, we're not going to produce more than this. Because if we produce more than, it's like artificial scarcity, like diamonds, right? If we go above a certain threshold of production, we start losing money. Like energy is one of the few things that are really like that, right? Normally, like if you produce more of something, you make more money. And when you get to a point where you can't sell it, you don't produce more, but you only don't produce more because there's demand. You don't actually start suppressing the price and you still sell all of it. Like energy, you can sell almost everything you produce, but you just get less and less and less the more you produce. So they'll find that. And let's be honest, like long term, U.S. energy doesn't want oil at 60 either. They want it right where Russia wants it, $70. Russia does good, and we do great. And I don't mean the consumer buying gas for their car. I mean America's energy industry does great at $70 oil. But we're going to continue to develop other energy resources because we have to. Because we have to. And we may get to a point where we can crank it out even more, make even more energy units, and still do well because of the energy demand that we're going to get from things like artificial intelligence. And that's not going away. And those of you that think it are, you can be a Luddite, crawl under your rock. It won't matter. The world will go on without you. Crypto will get mainstream legitimacy. By this time next year, I won't even have to talk about it anymore other than the new person that's like, I still don't know how to buy it. If you think about where Bitcoin has come to since 2015, this 10 years, 2015 to 2025, in 2015, nerds argued about it and people bought drugs with it. 2025, countries hold it. Billionaires argue about it. Where does it go from there? The digital dollar will become a primary unit of account in the United States and around the world. Next year, there's going to be a lot of people getting rid of the banks that are small business people. You're not going to need Stripe or PayPal for a lot of your transactions anymore. People are going to start paying for goods and services online with digital dollars. And the banks will be okay with it, and it will be their out. See, this is another masterstroke. I'm not saying it's good. I'm saying it's a masterstroke given the situation. the payment system that we all use today, the Visa, MasterCard payment system, I'm not talking about country to country. I'm talking about consumer level. Jack Mallers calls it the boomer payment network. And that's because it's been around basically exactly like it is since the 70s. And its origins really are in the late 40s, early 50s. And there were some changes made in the 70s, but they really weren't. And it's all the same all the way through. It's time to upgrade that shit. And they know it, but it's hard to do when you're like, but basically we make 3% on all the money, right? And maybe this bank only gets 1.5% and this bank gets 1.5% on two sides of a transaction, and in some discount rebate situation, only making 2% versus 3% or whatever. But in the end, they make a lot of fucking money off the payment networks, a lot of money. That's why when you go to the store, they want you to tap your card and do a direct transaction, because that's what that is. They don't get the protections of taking a credit card when they do that. But on smaller purchases, they don't care because they don't pay the fee. There's a lot of money in fees. So if the banks can make a small transaction fee, much smaller, but they don't have to work as hard for it, it's less friction overall. But they're also making back-end interest off every issued dollar. They make the same money to do less work with less risk. That's why it's a brilliant move to give the banks the opportunity to come into stablecoins. Could that have negative consequences? Abso-fucking-lutely. But it's how you get them to do it, and it's how we get this archaic system that is a lead weight on our economics off. It takes 72 hours to clear a transaction fully through the Visa, MasterCard, et cetera, network. Nobody can build on it. That's the other thing. You'll be able to integrate dollar payment systems without a merchant account into things like applications and websites, the way we can do with Bitcoin now. And you'll be able to integrate to where you'll have a seamless exchange capability as well. That's where this is all headed. The system is not collapsing. And I'm the guy that talks about systemic collapse all the time. That's not what this is. This is not a collapse of the system. This is not, you know, the media, including even a lot of the right, so-called right-wing media, wants to make out like Trump is an unhinged lunatic. Don't have any idea what he's doing. So is Elon. Elon bought the presidency, even though Kamala outspent Trump and Elon, right, by $600 million fucking dollars in the election. But Elon bought the election. It doesn't make any – but they'll say it because you'll believe it. They'll say it because you'll believe it. This is not a collapse. This is a transformation. Transformations are painful. They hurt. They don't always go – in fact, they never go off exactly as planned. And a lot of people get hurt in the transition. But they're also necessary. You know, here's a way to look at this, a biological analogy. Viruses. Everybody thinks viruses are bad. You're more virus than human. You have more virus units in your body right now than you have human cells. You are more virus than human. You're more bacteria than human. Not in weight, but in total units. Most viruses are incredibly benign to the human being. They don't seem to do anything, but they did something in the past. What does a computer virus do? Now, let's not think about like a computer virus that locks your computer down. What? Let's not worry about it being negative or positive. What does a computer virus do? Why do we name it a virus? A computer virus injects information into your computer. That's what it does. Now, you know, most of them are obviously for ill, right? Malware, et cetera, right? Because that's the motivation, is to steal. Why would I make a virus that makes your computer better? Why would I improve your computer performance and get nothing for it? I wouldn't, right? But that's what a patch is. A patch is a self-installed virus. They're both viruses. They both take an existing system and inject new information into it. Okay? Got that? All right. Sometimes we have a virus that goes through humanity. I'm going back to biological viruses now. And it makes some people a little bit sick, and it makes some people very sick, and it makes some people dead. And it might make 1/10 of 1% of people dead. And if we take away the people that were going to be dead within 6 months anyway, it might be 1/10 of 1/10 of 1% of people it makes dead. In other words, sometimes when we upgrade a system, because that's what a virus does, some of the machines that are so old and archaic and outdated or poorly built, poorly managed, poorly maintained, don't survive the update. In other words, if you take an old-ass computer running Windows 95 and try to upgrade it to whatever the fuck they call it now, right, you'll kill it. Can't handle the upgrade. That's viruses. Viruses are evolutionary mechanisms. They allow humans to exchange information with other humans. That's what they actually do. They're not good or bad. They just are. Sometimes they're really bad seeming because they kill a lot of people, but in the end, they're exchanging data. That's what they do. They're an evolutionary mechanism. That's what this is. It's an evolutionary, it's an economic evolutionary mechanism. The system of economics in the United States goes back in some level of its form to 1913. Federal Reserve controlling, contracting, expanding the monetary supply, 1913. There were multiple upgrades of the variants, 1933, 1964, 1971 was the last. The last major upgrade in the monetary system in the United States. Any monetary system can only last so long. The better it's built, the longer it can last. There will be forces that will shear at it, and it will need to be upgraded. The current monetary system is done. It's been held together only for one reason. The United States has a blue water navy that can destroy most of the planet in a couple weeks. We don't have to launch a single terrestrial missile. We could destroy half the world, and we say that's the way it is. And that's what really is the force behind what we, I'm not saying that's good. I'm saying that's what it is. But even that threat can only last so long. That's why you have the BRIC nations. They want their own currency. You have the Chinese with their own central bank, digital currency. All of these entities are competing to create a new economic paradigm. Everybody's creating viruses and trying to upgrade the system. This is the virus that will be injected into the whole system, whether it wants it or not. And then what happens when there's a new virus? Some people say, fuck it. And they just go along and they get the upgrade. Some people use antiviral medications and antiviral drugs and quarantines. And that's what some of the countries will do. Well, we won't let it in. Okay. You're not going to let software into your country when a lot of people in your country want it. Good luck with that. And what that means is some people won't survive the upgrade, and some people will be disfigured by the upgrade. Some people will be really harmed by the upgrade. But the upgrade is coming. Texas Plant Company says BTC virus is getting injected up your butt, and that's another virus. Bitcoin is part of this. It's actually multiple viruses, right? Bitcoin's a virus. It's a living entity at this point. It is a Tyrannosaurus Rex. Brought back to Earth when there's nothing that can fight it. And it's proliferating. And it's going to change things and drastically transform things. This moment will reward you if you're prepared. And it will punish you if you're panicked. I don't care how bad your situation is. This is the moment to be looking out and saying, now is the time to acquire long-term assets. If you have to go pick up aluminum fucking cans off the side of the road, do it. Period. And when this is what is really hurting people. There are people out there right now that will not buy Bitcoin because of people like me. Because I know people like me have been stacking it since 2013. Well, I'll never catch up to him. That is the dumbest, most fucking retarded take. And a lot of you doing it don't even know that's why you're doing it. The ones of you that are like, well, I'm kind of open to crypto, but Bitcoin's kind of had its day. And if I can just pick the next big hit, then I can get rich really fast. And then I'll take that money and then I'll buy Bitcoin. You live in fucking fantasy land. You might as well get in a woke Disney picture at that point. It's not going to happen. The same old boring way is the same old boring way is the same old boring way over and over again. Go look at how people built long-term, enduring generational wealth over time. It's always the same fucking thing. Always. It's slow, methodical, boring system follow. That's what it is. It is why you can't sit there and say for decades, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, and then say, but it has nothing to do with behavior. It has nothing to do with behavior. Not everybody that's rich today was born into money. People keep saying Elon was born into money. I guarantee he wasn't born into that much money. If I gave most of the people saying that inflation adjusted the same amount of money that Elon Musk started with, they'd be fucking broke in 10 years. They damn sure wouldn't be, you know, worth hundreds of billions of dollars. They damn sure wouldn't be able to say, look at all these companies with my name on them. That's not lifting up Elon. That's saying that's actually pushing down the person making the complaint. Most of the people that do the kind of shit like that, you don't even know their names. You'll never know their names. They don't want to be known. Elon is a unicorn, not that he's great and that he actually wants to be known. And what he does, the kind of companies he has, he kind of has to be that way. The average billionaire doesn't want you to know who they are. They want you to drive by their house and go, that's a pretty nice house. Probably worth about 800,000 million bucks. I bet you a guy that works, that owns that house, like he owns a tire shop or he's like a high-end engineer or a CEO or something. No. You know, he owns a company that owns 10 companies and he's worth like $20 billion and he lives in that. He doesn't want you to know. And if you track him down on paper he's worth almost nothing. And every time something like this happens, he goes, what do I buy this time? What do I buy this time? And he constantly leverages what he has to borrow more money to buy more stuff. And he doesn't buy what you buy. He doesn't buy what you buy. If he wants to drive a Maserati or a Lamborghini, he rents one for a month in Milan. And he goes to Milan for a month and drives a Lamborghini in Milan. He leases that supercar and he takes it to Germany and he drives it 200 miles, 300 miles an hour, or whatever, 250 miles, 220 miles an hour on the Autobahn. And then he comes back to his little place and he does it again. Over and over and over again. And you'll bitch about it and you'll complain about it, but what you won't tend to do is emulate the behavior that got him there. I'm not going to lie to you. You know, if you're 50 years old, you're probably not ever going to get to where he is now, let alone catch up to him. Doesn't matter. You can either emulate the behavior of people who have what you want or emulate the behavior that got you what you didn't want and just stick with that behavior. That's it. This is your choice right now. I'm on this today here at the end more and more because it's more true right now than it's ever been. This is your moment. This is your moment to change your behavior. You can listen to the guy that lost 75 pounds about what to eat, or you listen to your overweight fat ass doctor tell you that what I'm doing is dangerous. You can listen to the guy that has money tell you how to get money. Or you can listen to your broke friend tell you that what I'm telling you is a scam. You can listen to the TV tell you that other people have because you don't have. Or you can listen to me tell you that you can have as much as those people have if that's what you want. The reality that you'll find is a certain amount of sweat, but there's also a certain amount of risk, and there's a certain amount of sacrifice that goes with acquiring that level of wealth. And most people don't want to give that much risk and sacrifice to get to that level of wealth. That's okay. That's okay. I'm not kidding when I say it's okay. But if you don't give something, you'll get nothing. Working harder won't fix it. Getting your raise won't fix it. If you get a raise and you immediately put the raise to work, that will start to fix it. But if you get a raise and you just get a nicer car and a nicer house, that won't fix it. If you get a raise and all you now is it's easier to pay your credit card bills, that won't fix it. Most people complaining and bitching, I swear to God, if I handed you $100,000, you would be broke in 10 years. You'd be broke in 2 years. Most of you. Most of you. And again, if you're taking this personally, but you don't live this way, don't take it personally. If you're taking it personally and you do live this way, if you're thinking, oh shit, I don't have nothing. I work my ass off. He doesn't know. He doesn't understand. I could barely pay my bills. If he gave me $100,000, I'd be set. I promise you, if you are that person, you are going to be fucking broke. In fact, you might be worse off in 5 years if I gave you the $100,000 than if I did not. Let's take a couple questions and wrap up real quick here. I only got three questions today, but I think I probably missed them. Hey, Alabama, do you think housing is going to come down? Yes, in a way. So something I really didn't hit today and I meant to. What Trump has done by creating basically an accelerated recession that was already going to happen is put pressure on the Fed to follow their own rules and cut interest rates. When they cut interest rates, that alone will bring the cost of housing down because almost nobody goes out and buys it with money out of pocket. We also have a lot of people that have been trying to sell for a long time, and we have a pretty heavy inventory of overpriced properties that we'll have to correct to eventually sell as more people have to sell. Texas Plant Company says, I heard a minimum amounts are no longer exempt from tariffs. Thoughts? Okay, so I think this is what you're talking about. So a lot of these tariffs were called limiting tariffs. I think this is what he's asking about. And so Canada's like, whoa, 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 whoa. We do not tax American dairy at 75% or whatever it is because there's no tariff up to this point. Well, that's a trick that they do. That's one of those dishonest tariffs. So what they're basically saying is we need to bring in X 100,000 or X million gallons of American milk because we don't make enough for our own country, but we don't want any more than that. Well, by setting that tariff trigger at that point, what you do is you make sure you can import what you need and you don't import any that you don't need. And therefore, you protect your producers. They don't have to expand to meet the market demand. And if that's what you're asking, yes. And that's on the reciprocal side, though, from them. In other words, where Trump imposed this, then Canada says, well, we're tariffing everything. Well, there's a problem there, isn't there? This is why they're going to lose. All these countries going against Trump are going to lose. First of all, the narrative right now is we've done this three times before. Actually, we did it four, and one time it worked out really, really good, and they keep leaving that one out. They bring up when we did a bunch of tariffs during the Great Depression. Well, the whole world went into a freaking depression. It was a global depression. It wouldn't have mattered. And then the other two times were very early in our history, and the United States was far from the biggest consumer on the planet. You see, we're the biggest market in the world. We do the most buying. So in this war, we have that inherent advantage. But the other side of it is a lot of these countries that do these limiting tariffs, they need to buy up to X. And that's why they say up to X is zero or it's 2% or something little. And then above that number, it's really high. Well, if you tariff it all and now your supply is short in your own country and you can't make it, you got your own problems, don't you? Next up. Bo Zero, can you talk about this, if it will or won't help repatriate money that are being offshore in Ireland with Microsoft, Google, Apple, et cetera? Okay, so that's a different issue. So there is a lot of money being held by giant American corporations outside the United States due to tax policy. A lot of it did get repatriated in 2016 to 2020, and then COVID came in and threw a big-ass monkey wrench in that, okay? But I think that might be the next big deal that Trump will want to make. Like, and it might be in the big, beautiful bill, and we just haven't heard anybody talk about it yet, where some of these companies, if you'll bring the money back to the United States, we won't tax it, or we won't tax it at a full rate. Because Apple doesn't want $800 billion in China. And they never did, but that was what they were forced to do because China treated their money better than we did, believe it or not. They did. Gave them their money much better treatment than the United States did. So now they've amassed this massive amount of money. If they brought it back to the United States in the current situation, it would be the biggest class action lawsuit you ever had on behalf of their shareholders. Who would say, well, you just took it up the shorts, you know, for $40 billion in taxes you didn't have to pay just to move the money to a different bank. Well, what Apple would really might want to do is actually invest that money here under a new paradigm. They need to bring the money back to do it. So I think that might be kind of the next thing that you see come out of all of this is some agreements to repatriate money. With that, I do need Okay, let's see. Builder of Castles, how fast would websites have a plug-in for accepting Bitcoin dollar coin when it gets out to the banks, like you said? Is there a word for something that short? It'll just be a new – it's exactly what he's saying. Just be a new plug-in. Imagine being able to accept dollars without a merchant account. You can right now. The problem is there's not enough people on the buying side that can do it. And the big thing is going to be protections. Credit card companies offer protection, so it will be more face-to-face and trusted purchases initially. But I guarantee you there'll be some sort of service that's less hassle than a merchant account that will provide some sort of assurance on returns or something like that. Or only trusted companies will be the ones that people trust with it. Right now, you're probably, let's say right now, if you buy something, you generally try to get a refund before you run to the credit card company, unless you're a little bitch, Karen, right? So as long as companies have a good track record of giving refunds under their policy, now the concern is actually theft and fraud. If somebody gets hold of your account and spends your money, right now, if somebody gets your credit card number, right, then when they spend your money, you call the credit card company and the person that gets fucked is me who sold you the product and you get your money back. We could end up in a situation by protecting the spender through like a two-party verification. So when I go to send the money, I get some other thing that I have to enter a separate piece of information to approve. You know, like they have credit cards right now. You can turn them on and off. I don't know if you know that with an app. So you have your credit card and you go to the bar and you forgot it and you left it at the bar. You shit. And you're like home now. You can just open up your app and turn that credit card off and no new charges will go through it. Or you get home and you realize your credit card fell out of your wallet. You can just turn it off. I think we're going to have some sort of fail-safe like that built into that to account for the issue that you can't just, you know, basically turn it on, turn it off again type situation. Real quick before I wrap up today, I want to remind you guys one of the ways you can help support us, do your online shopping at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. My item of the day today is actually a deal of the day. This is a product that I've just never taken time to write up. I love it. I've used it for years. But it was like $250. And I just didn't think it would sell enough to make it worth doing the write-up. And most of you that buy through T-Spaz, if you were going to buy it, you would go through T-Spaz anyway. But today I woke up to a price alert. It's on sale. They already knocked it down, and then they gave it a 33% off. See, I told you some consumer goods are going down in price. The Meter Block Smart Meat Thermometer is on sale today at the lowest price it's ever been. I think it's like $159. This is the four-probe block, so you can be cooking four separate things at once. But one thing I want to be clear about with this product is that its weakness is how thick the probes are. And if you had a half inch or thinner piece of meat, it really doesn't work. You need an instant read thermometer for this. This is 3/4, better off 1 inch steaks, chops, roasts, whole chicken pieces, whole chickens, turkeys, etc. When I cook turkey, for instance, for Thanksgiving and Christmas, I quarter my turkey into 4/4, and I put one of these probes in each, and I cook the dark meat to 160 and let carry over do the rest, and I cook the white meat to 145, I think, or 148, and let carry over do the rest. And by doing that, I pull each piece as it needs to be pulled. If I'm making steaks for four people, I can take orders like a restaurant, medium, medium well, rare, etc. And then on the app on the phone, each steak's there. And is each steak cooks the temperature and it's time to rest. And the app even tells you when you have a target temperature and a pull temperature and you let carry over heat. The app even tells you to do that. It has all kinds of cool stuff in it. The app is totally free. This thing is the bomb. It is the best tool like this. This is going to be one of those tools that you will either love or you ain't going to buy it. If you're the kind of person that cooks like I do, you're going to want one of these. I broke down and bought one about 3 years ago, and I think I paid $269 for it. Something like that. Again, right now, $159. That is a deal. In fact, they have the two probe one on sale for $159. You can literally get twice the value for the same money on this product today. This is one of those deals that comes up from that comes from Amazon like this, and it can last a week, a month, or a day. You just never know. I'll do one more question here at the end for you. Trammell says, RLUSD is the Ripple stablecoin. Is that bad too? Why? Let me just put it differently. Why? Why would you use a Ripple-backed stablecoin or a stablecoin running on Ripple's rails when you could – I mean, right now, if you ask me what stablecoin to trust to not rug you, it's USDT. And then let's remember, no one will ever get rich holding stablecoins. You're holding dollars, right? So you're really more worried about the reliability of the network and the reliability of asset backing. I'm telling you right now. I'm telling you right now, right? Okay, a little flashback. Ripple is a company that issues its own currency. Tether is a company that uses dollars to back a currency that it issues in return for an interest payment on the back end. You make your decision. My view of Ripple is this. It is garbage. It is a scam. It is a securities scam. It is a company. Okay, on top of all of that, is a company that is able to print money at will, that buys influence, and I won't have, of all of the shitcoins, they're in a special class of shitcoin that's like, there's shit, and then there's maggots, and then there's shit under the maggots, that's Ripple. But you do what you want. I won't tell you not to do it. I'll just tell you what I think because you asked. Anyway, the trade wars. I hope you got a view of this today. You know, you spent 2 hours here if you watched the whole thing. That's different than everything else you've been told. And I think if you look, you will find verification of every piece of it that I gave you. What you won't find is it all put together. When you put it all together, the picture makes sense. You either have to believe that a guy worth $4.5 billion, who's a successful real estate developer, who's done business all over the world for decades, that started out with money from his dad, yes. But again, most people that would start out with that amount of money would be broke today. I'm sorry, they would. They'd end up at the bottom of a swimming pool or something else. You have to believe that a guy that successfully did all that shit chose to become president and then go insane. Or you have to believe that he has some idea of what he's doing, even if you don't think it'll work. So if you're going to say, well, he's not, you know, like the left is saying shit like he has dementia and shit, like, guys, your gaslight is really bright now. Please go away. So you either have to say he has no idea what he's doing or he has a plan. And you can believe he has a plan without believing that it'll work. But you have to say there's if you have any common sense, if you're not ate up the butt with TDS right now, if you don't believe the bullshit, Elon Musk is after your Social Security. Elon Musk doesn't give a fuck about your $1,300 Social Security payment, old ladies. I'm sorry. It's nonsense. And the people screaming the loudest, you're not going to get Social Security anyway unless we fix this shit, right? These people are 20 years old screaming about Social Security. All you're doing is paying your grandma's, and you'll never get yours unless we fix this, right? So you either have to be ate up the butt with that nonsense, or if you're a reasonable, rational person, there has to be a reason for this. I gave you the reason. Again, it doesn't mean it'll work, and it doesn't mean it won't be painful even if it does. It's just a reason. Oh. And when you look at a picture like this, you can start to answer questions that even I have asked and not had answers for recently. What's up with Donald Trump's bullshit, and it is bullshit, about Canada becoming the 51st state? It has to be approved by Congress. Not going to happen. Has to be approved by Canada. Not going to happen. So that's not going to happen. And it would be bad for the electoral profile of the United States from the view of anybody who's remotely center Democrat to Republican. It would be terrible. It's, you know, first of all, it's too big to be one country, so it's going to be two. So that's four liberal senators. It's 60 million people who vote 70% to the left. So it's not going to work. It's not going to work. It wouldn't be good if it did. Why would you do it then? Why? So that they can capitulate while they get a victory. So Carney or whoever the other ass clown is can say, we shut Donald Trump's hole about this 51st state bullshit while they completely capitulate on the tariffs. Same reason Ukraine. You want to see how patterns form here? Last one. Ukraine invaded, what is it now? A portion of Russia. Now I can't think of what, Kursk, right? Ukraine invaded Kursk. It's very rural. It's of no strategic importance whatsoever. There's no military assets. That's why it was a soft target. They just went in and made a big peninsula. They got their asses handed to them and kicked out of there over time, too, by the way. But why? Well, so that had the war stopped, had they gotten their ceasefire while they had control, operational control of Kursk, and Russia said, we want Kursk back, they could have said, we want the Donbass back to have something to trade. One attack the other just to have something to trade back for the thing they couldn't take back. And then they lost that, right? That's, again, not every battle plan works. Going off complete, and I do think it's lunatic unhinged, and I would never have done it, right? But this lunatic unhinged shit, this act, Canada will be the 51st state, we have to have it, gives the Canadians a way to have a victory when they're ready to have an out. And trust me, they're going to need an out because they need us more than we need them. Period. End of story. I'm sorry if you don't like it. With that, tomorrow we'll be doing something not related to any of this crap. It'll be something more practical, homesteady type stuff. We got a great interview for you on Wednesday, and we'll keep going forward and doing it all again. Take care, guys. Thanks for tuning in today. Just run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. You don't have to be another face in the crowd. You don't have to live the way they tell you to. Make your own way, the others will follow. The revolution.